Hi, I'm Carl Kershaw, and you're listening to the True North Country Comics Podcast.
Welcome to a special edition of the True North Country Comics Podcast, dedicated to promote Canadian comic book creators and supporters. I'm John Swinimer. If you have a comment, criticism, or question, you can contact me at john@truenorthcountrycomics.com. Throughout the month of May, these podcasts are dedicated to the exhibitors who would have participated at the Toronto Comic Arts Festival 2020. TCAF is an annual event that celebrates independent, amateur, and professional comic book creators in intimate settings supported by the exhibition, programming, and creator signings. On this episode, I chat with Carl Kershaw. The podcast is available on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Carl has been drawing comics professionally since the age of 18. He's worked on a number of titles for Marvel and DC Comics, including Superman, The Flash, Deadpool, Spider-Man, Teen Titans, and Wonder Woman, and created the YA series Gotham Academy. His current work is the Eisner-nominated fantasy adventure series Isola, which he co-created with Brendan Fletcher and is published by Image Comics. His ongoing webcomic, The Abominable Charles Christopher, won the Eisner Award for Best Webcomic in 2011. So, without further ado, here's my chat with Carl Kershaw. Carl Kershaw, thank you very much for taking time to chat with me.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Super. So what I usually do to start the interview is ask creators about their first comic book. So I wonder if you remember what was the first comic book that you read?
Oh, boy. I guess my first recollection of a comic book would be at my grandparents' house having an old, it was like an old Spider-Man comic book, but it wasn't one of the, you know, like Amazing Spider-Man or Spectacular or something like that. It was, I feel like it was some kind of like Electric Company tie-in. Remember how Spider-Man used to be on the Electric Company? I think it was a comic that sort of featured that I carried around for a long time. Because that was sort of some of my first exposure to Spider-Man and superheroes. But beyond that, I mean, I used to get a lot of those kind of bagged, like poly-bagged three comic collections from the local pharmacy or whatnot.
Sure.
But my first, I have a hard time with this question, but I do vividly recollect the first comic that I really kind of plucked off the shelf for myself that was life-changing was Elektra Assassin number 2 off of a spinner rack. I was waiting for my dad outside a Canadian Tire or something. There was a spinner rack of comics, and it was a big, I don't know if you remember it. It was the one with a big shot of Garrett's face on the cover, painted by Bill Sienkiewicz, of course. And I flipped through that and brought it home. It was so unlike anything I'd ever seen before that it was just, it really changed my entire perception of the medium.
So, yeah, and he's still inspiring people to this day. Cool. Good. So the reason for this chat is basically we're focusing around TCAF, the Toronto Comic Arts Festival. I want to talk a bit about what you were planning to exhibit. I know the show won't go on, which is unfortunate for everybody because it's always a great show. But I'm wondering, what was your plan for being at the show and exhibiting?
I had two objectives, really, as far as exhibiting at TCAF. The first was I was going to be there with Brendan Fletcher and Michelle Asarasakorn, who are my team on Isola, our image book, along with Aditya Bidikar, who's in India, so he couldn't join us. But Brendan and Michelle and I have been going to the show together. And last year I wasn't there because I was in Japan, and the volume 1 trade of Isola had come out. Volume 2 trade would have been out and at that show, at TCAF. Basically, we would have been debuting it there. But TCAF, of course, is not happening. And that book itself has not been printed yet because everything is stalled right now. So we would have had the second volume of Isola there. And also, I was just ready to launch a Kickstarter for the third volume of The Abominable Charles Christopher, my webcomic, the third hardcover edition. And I had to put that on hold as well. So I don't know if that would have been out, but at least I would have been letting people know that they could support it online or help fund it. So those are my those are my TCAF objectives. And yeah, sadly, it's not happening, which is a shame because I missed it last year and I really loved that show.
Yeah, I was going to ask if there's any plans for digital or you definitely want hard copies.
Yeah. Well, of Isola, it will eventually be digital. I mean, you could get all the individual issues digitally now. But as far as the collection goes, I don't think that will come out digitally until the physical copy hits first. For the webcomic, it's all online anyway, so you could go read that for free.
Sure.
I mean, I collect them to sell in print just because I like to. I like making books of them, and it's a different reading experience. But if you want to read it digitally, you can read it all for free online at abominable.cc, or I sell PDFs of them and physical copies on my website. So they're available. I mean, the webcomic is, you know, that can go at its own pace, and I'm not concerned about it, but it would have been nice to have the new Image book out.
Sure. Now, I have to go back to something you mentioned before about being in Japan. Mm-hmm. Michelle and I had a conversation about the fact that you and Brendan were there, and you went to the Studio Ghibli Museum. I wonder if you recall that trip.
Yeah. Oh, it was great. It was – I have to listen to her interview with you. I haven't listened to that yet. Yeah,
sounded cool.
We happened to – I had been there before – a couple times before to that museum. And then Brendan and Michelle came on that most recent trip. I lived in Japan for a year with my family. My wife was teaching there. But during that trip, a lot of the TCAF guys came over, as they do every year. Mm-hmm. And I met up with them in Tokyo, and we went to the museum. And so it was, special because we're all so inspired by Miyazaki's work and Studio Ghibli's films anyway, but to go there with my creative team and my friends is kind of something different because we're there. I mean, there's the, I don't know if you've been there, but it's like,
never. I wish I would have gone.
Yeah. It's a magical place. I mean, it's very focused on children and wonder, but there are a lot of sort of small exhibits of original art. And it's not so much original art, it's mostly reproductions, but there are exhibits that sort of discuss process. And so Michelle and I spent a long, long, long time just staring at the different color separations and palettes and how they, you know, how water moves in Ghibli films, how they do like reflections and ripples and sky colors. I mean, we were just kind of nerding out over that. And I think we took, you know, if we didn't take any physical notes, we at least took mental notes, and we tried to bring that to our own book.
Yeah, so definitely Miyazaki is one of your influences, I bet, then.
Yeah, for sure. It has been for quite a long time. Brendan and I have been watching them since the first one. He actually would somehow, I don't know how Brendan did this, but he would get his hands on imported things all the time. And he showed me, I was over at his house one time, I think we were probably 17 or 18, and he had a Japanese copy of My Neighbor Totoro,
which
we watched. So that was the first Ghibli film I saw, and and it was mind blowing. It was I love everything about it. And
that's cool.
I think in some ways it's sort of informed the tone that we use to tell stories in. And in other ways, I think it really just reinforced an instinct that was already there, you know, because we always liked quieter, not meandering so much, but more character driven stories, less plot based things, basically more indulgent storytelling. So it was kind of a license to do that. That's how I felt about it.
Yeah, no, it's cool. You're doing some great work there, and you're definitely getting a lot of critical acclaim. So good on you. So want to switch gears slightly and talk about the tools you use to create your work. I wonder if you could expand a bit on that.
Yeah, I'm pretty much 100% digital now. I was pretty much since Cameron Seward and I worked on a few Assassin's Creed comics. I guess quite a while ago now. God, it feels like not that long ago, but it was a while ago. I can't remember the year, but it was at that point that I bought my first Wacom Cintiq tablet. Mm-hmm. And kind of was moving into digital there, and pretty rapidly after that went completely digital. Before that, it was, you know, standard bristle board pens and pencils. So I used the Cintiq for a bunch of years. And then when I was leaving for Japan, I didn't want to lug that big screen with me. So I bought an iPad Pro and the Apple Pencil. And mostly because Clip Studio Paint was available for it. And it is pretty much it has parity with the desktop version. I think it's pretty much exactly like what you use on a desktop computer. So when I learned that, I bought it. I think I'd pay a monthly subscription for it. And it was a little awkward at first, just because the pencil feels a bit different than the Wacom stylus, but I got used to it pretty quickly, mostly out of necessity. I mean, I took that alone to Japan to do all my work on. And after a couple issues of drawing with that, it just became second nature. Now I just do all my work on it. With the exception maybe of some color work, I try to do a lot of coloring in Clip Studio, but I will often bring things back into Photoshop, which I'm more comfortable with to sort of finish things off. But that's basically it. Like, I do, Clip Studio is kind of a one-stop shop for making comics. You can do pretty much everything in it, and I do.
Did you notice any difference? Did you move to the version 2 of the pencil, or are you still on the first one?
I'm still on the first one. I would like to move to the next one. I haven't yet. They just released the 2020 iPad Pros. And I think I'll probably do, I skipped the last version, so I think I'll probably jump on this, partly for the pencil and partly just for the speed and memory boost, because while my iPad, I guess a couple years old now, it's totally capable, but it's it kind of chugs a bit on really, really big files. If you're using if you're doing color and a lot of layers, it's a little bit getting to be a bit long in the tooth. So I'll probably upgrade. I'm curious to see what that new pencil's like. I'll be happy just to not have it roll off the table.
Yeah, it just magnetically attaches. Yeah.
And the charging. I mean, the charging of that first pencil is ridiculous.
It's a bit awkward.
It's really awkward.
They figured it out now, that's for sure. Yeah. So what you were just talking about software. I'm wondering if you have any advice that you want to pass along to any new comic book creators, whether it be tools or techniques, something that you think might be helpful for them.
Well, regarding software, I'd say everyone should. I think Clip Studio has a pretty long free trial, and I think there's I'm using the Pro version of it. I don't know what it's called, if it's Pro or whatever, or EX or something. Their naming scheme's a little confusing, but so I think I pay a little more for it because it has a story mode. It lets you see, you can work on things in as stories, and it lets you see all your pages of the whole book alongside the page you're working on, which is really handy. But if you don't need that and you don't care, you can get it really, really cheap. And it's, as I said, it's like a one-stop shop. I mean, you don't really need Photoshop and all that. You can work very, very cheaply digitally if you have whatever, you know, a tablet that'll run it, or even a computer and another small drawing tablet. I recommend that. The other thing I recommend to everyone, especially now that everything is up in the air in terms of print, is to, just make stuff and put it online for free and get people to read it and critique it and build your audience there. I mean, I've been saying this for a bunch of years now, but I feel like it's kind of more relevant now.
Sure.
I always think of it as a direct line of connection from the artist to the audience. It just makes sense to me to put stuff up and let people see it. I've never believed that it affects physical sales of things.
Oh, so that's good advice.
If it were up to me, I'd put everything online for free and then still sell physical books to anyone who wants them.
Right. Good stuff. I was looking at your Twitter feed not too long ago, and you mentioned that you're working on a new webcomic. I'm wondering if there's any hints you can give us about what that might be.
Yeah, it was just today, in fact. I was, since we've been in sort of pandemic lockdown, I've been, everything was, and also Brendan's been sick, so we haven't really been working on Isola. I just sort of took the opportunity to make something new, and it kind of came out of nowhere. I've been writing a story that I wanted to develop for an original graphic novel for the last year. But just a few days ago, I kind of was going to bed and had a sort of a disposable idea for something. And I thought, oh, well, this would be like a really manageable thing to do in this time that I've got. Like, I've got this time at home where I have nothing else to do. I'd like to start something that I can finish pretty quickly. So I started drawing it, and I've drawn 3 pages of it, and I just put it up online on my website for patrons of my site. That's just if you want to see it kind of unfold as I do it page by page. Once it's done, I'm just going to put the entire thing there for free for anybody. But if you're a process nerd and you want to see it kind of come together, it's kind of going up piecemeal now. So it's really, really fun. I'm surprised at just how much fun and delight I'm taking it. It's like a science fiction thing. I kind of described it as it's sort of like Metroid mixed with Hellboy.
Oh, wow.
Tonally, that's kind of what its roots are.
Cool.
Yeah, it's I don't know what else to say about it, but it's a pretty short story, and it's sort of like weirdly like sci-fi slash paranormal. So that's what I'm doing, and I'll post updates to that as I roll out pages.
That's something to look forward to for sure. Wondering if you have any other projects on the go that you like to talk about.
Not really. I mean, that's kind of all my time take. I've got kind of more on my plate than I can really manage between like the webcomic, which I try to sneak in whenever I can, and bookmaking. This new thing, and like just trying to get, we try to get 5 issues of Isola out every year, but I don't know what's going to happen this year. Between all that stuff and, you know, looking after kids because they're not in school.
That's right.
that's about it.
Thanks to Carl for the chat. You can discover more about Carl on Twitter at Carl Kerschel. That's K-A-R-L. K-E-R-S-C-H-L, and online at carlkerschel.com. And thanks to you for listening to the True North Country Comics podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to and like this podcast on Apple Podcasts. And please leave a good rating. Also check out the truenorthcountrycomics.com website and follow along on Twitter at True North Comics. Please send your feedback to John at truenorthcountrycomics.com. Thanks again for listening. Come back soon for another episode. Bye for now. True North Country Comics Podcast is copyright True North Country Comics, copyright 2020.